Hey everybody, it's Kenya, and this is the Thank You for Saying No podcast, where we find meaning in life's unexpected turns. Hey everybody, this is a really special episode because we are doing a cross collaboration between the Thank You for Saying No podcast and the Illuminating Wisdom podcast. Let's start with some introductions here. So my name is Kenya, and I host a podcast called Thank You for Saying No. We talk about times we were told no, said no, or a situation didn't work out in a life-changing way, and how we're thankful for that because of what it taught us or what it led us to. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, watch us on YouTube, give us a follow on Instagram at Thank You for Saying No. And Marcia, why don't you introduce Illuminating Wisdom?
So I'm Marcia, and first of all, I'm super excited. You reached out to me last week and said, let's do this. So I'm glad that we're both here. So my podcast is different from yours because you have a very singular theme. Even though everybody's got a different story, they're imparting wisdom. So we have a crossover is that I also focus on wisdom from very different kinds of people. Some people might be other lawyers like me, but of course, interesting lawyers like you.
Oh, yeah.
They exist. I know most people are like, what do you mean? That's an oxymoron. They exist. Not a lot, but they do.
Yeah.
Other coaches, because I'm also an executive coach. Other people who are interested in energy and energy healing and spirituality. And just generally interesting people. Because I wanted to create a podcast that was, because my mind is all over the place, that every single week, no matter who you are, you're going to find somebody that resonates with you.
Yeah.
So I'm super happy to be here.
And where can people find you? Are you on Instagram?
I'm on everything. Instagram, Spotify, YouTube, iHeartRadio, LinkedIn, everywhere.
And what's your handle on Instagram?
Illuminating Wisdom.
Makes it really easy.
Same as the name of my business, same as everything.
Excellent. And you guys, so a little backstory. Marcia was my professor, and it's funny calling you Marcia. This is like my first time actually doing
it. I know, she's like, she did it. Yes, finally.
I always call her professor. But I worked as your research assistant, and then when I graduated, it was like a full circle moment for me to come back and speak to your class, and now to have you on my podcast and do this cross collaboration. It's just really cool. It feels really good and cathartic.
And I'm so glad that you came to speak to the class because, and when I'm going to ask you some questions about your journey, I think it's really important for young people to realize that they can have a job that they like, especially lawyers and law students, because so many lawyers, but just so many people in general, hate their lives, hate their jobs, and you show it's possible, right? And I know your journey wasn't easy, and we'll talk a little bit about that in a minute, but what I love is that when the students see somebody your age, because you're just a few years older than them, right? And you might be younger than some of them, they realize, oh, my life doesn't have to suck as a lawyer. I can do something I'm passionate about. I can do something... Because I'm one of the few happy lawyers I know, and I've been a happy lawyer for 31 years now.
Yeah.
31 years, so older than you probably. But, she's like, yes, that's okay. But it's possible.
Yeah, I love that. I do love what I do, and I'm really grateful for that. So this is really awesome for me because I know you professionally. I know your background and your legal career and all that stuff and as a professor. But I think today I'm going to get to know you on a more like intimate and emotional level. And I hope to share some of that of me too. And so let's just get right into it. Today, let's start with a no moment that you've had either professionally, relationship, moving, anything you're comfortable sharing.
So I've never shared this I've never spoken about this, but I've written about it. I wrote about it in a book chapter. And it was really hard for me to come up with a no because I live my whole life about yes and that no, no is a bad no. Every no is a good no.
I love that.
But of course, it takes a while. You got to be like down in the depths to get to that kind of, you know, rise like the phoenix kind of thing. So I, when I thought about the biggest no moment, it was in 2020 when I got divorced. And it was in the height of COVID. And the reason was, so this is ex-husband number two. I have two ex-husbands, which I remain friendly with both of them, which is a whole other podcast.
Wow.
Well, here's the saga, right? So I met him, we were Facebook friends for like 8 years. And like I was, he's cute, but I don't know. Right? Then he was always in a relationship and it was complicated and whatever. And then one day it was. And so one day I sent him like a happy birthday thing. And immediately we met like the next week and we were married 6 months later.
Wow.
Crazy. Now I was in my late 40s. So of course, all of my friends are like, oh my God, couples goals. It could happen. It could be you. I was like, yes, it could be you. So, and they were traveling the world on these glamorous places, holding retreats, doing all this kind of stuff like that. But then we had, right after getting married, we had a series of really serious personal issues in my family and other kinds of things and health-wise that now in retrospect, I can see why it didn't work out. But it was the kind of stuff that would go through, people would go through in 15 years happened in this period of time that was very, very short and compressed, which I'm not going to go into too much detail about that. But when he's like, I can't do this anymore, I was like, what do you mean? Because he was a firefighter. I was like, you're a firefighter. I would have, you know, burned up in a fire. I'd wipe your crusty ass for the rest of your life. It is what it is, right? That's what for better or for worse means.
Yeah.
But I was all in my head. Mm-hmm. When he filed for divorce, he chose to live in the same building with me.
Wow.
We don't share a child. We don't have a dog. We don't have a house plant. So it was just kind of odd and weird.
Yeah.
And I was like, am I going to see him in the elevator? What's going to happen? The benefit of COVID, though, was that you could barely leave the house. Right? And I live across the street from the beach, so I would go to the beach, I would come home. But I used that time to kind of think about, what's the why? Why did this happen? Yeah. Because we had everything going for us. And why is he living in the same building? That's weird, right? 100 out of 100 people would not live in the same building as their ex, right? So, which basically forced me to stay inside because I was so afraid, you know, of running into him. And we didn't argue, by the way. It was just like, I can't do this anymore. And staying inside forced me to do a lot of healing. So the no was, no, I'm not going to be in this relationship anymore. But we continued to talk, which again was strange, but it is what it is. But that time, being stuck in my house, I had already learned a lot of different energy healing modalities, whatever. But then I had to like really like save myself.
Yeah.
Right. So I've talked on LinkedIn and others about, you know, having thoughts of not wanting to be here anymore because I don't want to use certain words that might get screened out, you know, from on social media. But just where I was literally researching, because I'm a lawyer, I'm researching everything. What's going to happen with the life insurance policy if I you know, if I jump off this bridge? Like I went to the depths of depression. And so when people are like, you're so happy all the time, it's like, I worked on that happiness like it was a full-time job.
Yeah.
I got certified in hypnotherapy because I wanted to retrain my brain. All these other modalities because you're home all day. What are you going to do? You can be on Clubhouse and you can work and there's only so much you can do, right? But you got to do stuff.
Yeah.
So I would spend sometimes 12 hours a day just doing very deep, hard work. And what that led me to realize, and if I fast forward to today, I actually called him for his birthday this year. And I said, I want to thank you for leaving. And I said to him, I said, because I wouldn't be the person I am today. I would not have gone through those terrible, terrible depths. I wouldn't have, like, I totally made a completely different relationship with what I think God is, which has changed my life. And I became less scared of things.
You covered so many things just now. Thank you for sharing that. How did God like evolve for you through this process?
So I grew up as the kind of Catholic where like every night we said the rosary. And if it was up to my mother, the mass would still be in Latin. Okay. Like that kind of Catholic, like, like, you know, those priests and the family, etc. But I never felt that connection. Cause I'm like, wait a minute, I don't understand a God who's going to like punish me. And if my child isn't baptized, the baby's going to go to hell. When was the Bible wasn't really written by, so all of these different things. So I became a lapsed Catholic. And then I started looking at other churches because I was trying to figure out like, why God would you do this? Because first of all, we had like a large social media following. We had like people look to us aspirationally, like, oh my God, you guys are like the goals. And I'm thinking, so part of it was ego, like, you know, what the heck, right? And then, but part of it was like, I don't understand why I would have this tremendous love in my life for it to be taken away. And so I didn't hate God, but I started looking at all these other religions. I started looking at a lot more Eastern faiths. I started looking a lot more into metaphysics. And I started looking more of, you know, thinking about that I actually am, I'm going to sound crazy here, but I don't care, right? So that's what happens when you're over 50, you don't give a fuck, you don't care, so whatever, right? I started thinking, I started looking at traditions where kind of we are all God. And that my role and my role on this planet is to spread a message, not of God, but I look at God as love, as unconditional love, as uncompromised forgiveness. And people will sit there and say, because right now we're recording, you know, this terrible war in Israel with Hamas is, you know, things going on in Darfur. So many terrible things are going on in the world, right? And I started really thinking about what a free will is. And I started thinking that everybody comes to the planet for a reason, right? And I started looking at past lives and regression. I believe in all of that stuff. And I say it proudly. I'm not a afraid to be the crazy woo-woo lawyer.
No, I love it.
And I started thinking, okay, we made this agreement to come down here, right? And his role in my life was to help me to help other people. And that if I look at God as pure love, you know, I actually don't even call it God. I call it Joy now. Like, hey, Joy, how's it going? I talk to all day long. I talk to God. A lot of my family members are like, but you don't go to church. I said, yeah, because I don't feel anything. So my relationship with God changed. I mean, I went to one church where I literally got baptized. It was 40 degree weather. I did all that stuff. I'm like, I still don't feel it because I can't feel a God that would punish and make things terrible for people.
Yeah.
I couldn't feel that. But when I started changing what my view of God is, it made things make much more sense of that everybody has free will, but we come down here for a reason. And I think the reason most people are so unhappy is they don't know why they're here. I didn't know I was here. It my know of him not having left, me not having looked at 8 million different kinds of religious and other kind of metaphysical stuff,
yeah.
I wouldn't be where I am now. That's why it was hard when you said, think about your no moments. Like, I don't have any no moments that were bad.
Yeah.
If you were to ask me a few years ago when I was like researching all kinds of things that, you know, I would never do right now,
yeah,
I would not have said that.
Mm-hmm.
And now when I talk to other people and I help people and I talk about, you know, the importance of uncompromised forgiveness and, you know, there was a period of time when I had a very close family member who was homeless during this time when I was going through this divorce. And I'm like, you're supposed to be here. But I got through it and it made me stronger.
Yeah.
And so all the no's that happen, I always look at every no as a divine detour, right? Of some other thing that's supposed to happen. Because otherwise I'd be doing different things. Now, ex-husband now, I'm climbing Kilimanjaro in August because of him.
Wow.
He's organizing the trip.
That's so cool.
FYI, I'm not supposed to walk up 2 flights of stairs.
What?
So, literally, because I have bad knees.
Oh, my God.
But I'm going to do it because it's hard.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have had that ability, because Lord knows I could do other things besides climbing Kilimanjaro, you know, when I'm not supposed to climb stairs. But now I'm like, all right, I'm going to train for the next 10 months. I'm going to do it because it's hard.
Yeah.
I got through that hard thing. Right, with him.
Mental, like, you know you can
and
do
I
it.
And I tell everybody that you've already survived the worst day of your life.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that you're still here.
Yeah.
Right? And so when I think of that, when I was dealing with a person who was homeless, when I was dealing with other family members who were very ill, when I had my own health issues, and I'm like, how could you go? And I'm like, thank God you left.
Mm-hmm.
Because I couldn't be where I am today.
That's so interesting. So you reminded me of a story. So I had an ex as well. One long-term relationship. We were together for like 4 years. We lived together in Berkeley. Mm-hmm. And he suffered from addiction. And so, you know, we eventually broke up. And then like 4 years later, I get a call that he overdosed on fentanyl. Mm-hmm. And he ended up passing away. And so at his memorial, this girl, I'll call her Sally because I don't want to say her name. But so at his memorial, this girl, Sally, she flew there from New York all by herself. She obviously knew him. And so I was talking to her at the memorial and I was like, hey, like, are you here by yourself? Like, if you want to get dinner, let me know, whatever, whatever. And so then we end up getting dinner and we're talking and I could tell like she was a little like drunk, like she was intoxicated for sure. And we, you know, we just got to talking and I encouraged her to like, why don't you like check out a meeting when you get back home or whatever. And so she, you know, we stayed in contact. I kept checking in on her every single day for like a few weeks. And finally, she's like, you know, I'm going to go check out a meeting. And she went. And then it's been like a year now. And she just got a year clean and sober. Aww. And she gets to start like her whole life. And just, I met her mom, actually. They were both in California. This makes me kind of emotional. But her mom was like, thank you so much. Like, I have my daughter back. And like, of course, I would want Patrick's to still be here. But just seeing how divinely guided that was and how I was able to help someone, even though this relationship ended, was really beautiful. And it reminded me of what you just shared.
So what made you decide to tell her to go to a meeting? Because I don't think people realize how that sometimes a one sentence that you tell somebody can change somebody's life.
Yeah.
For good or for bad, right?
Yeah.
So what made you say to her, maybe you should go to a meeting?
I saw...
Because you weren't close friends, no, anything we like weren't. That, right?
I So I don't know if you know this. I'm 12 years clean. And so I, thank you. Well, let's see, 2011, yeah, 12 years clean. And so I just saw so much of myself in her. And so I really just was sharing my own experience getting clean with her. And I knew that's our language, you know, right. Like as addicts, our language is sharing our experience. And so I was like, you know, going to meetings really helped me. Like, maybe you should try it. Like, I don't know. I have no idea. Maybe it'll work. Right. And so I think the way I approached it was like coming from my own experience and talking to her about how much it changed my life. And I think that really inspired her to like give it a try.
I'm so glad you did that. You know, my son's father, not either of my ex-husbands, don't judge me.
Never.
Don't judge me. Like, but he died last year of alcohol poisoning. Mm. And so I would go to, you know, meetings for people, you know, and I have another very close family member who has a substance use disorder and bipolar. So I'm always around people. I've always been around people with those struggles.
Yeah.
And it is very hard because I used to go to meetings, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and one of my closest friends from high school, you know, I went to my first Narcan. I mean, I was 17 years old, right? It's not easy to do that.
No.
And so, first of all, congrats for 12 years.
Thank you.
Right? Because some people can't make 12 days. And more importantly, congrats because you've now paid it forward to her, right? And you know, let's hope and pray and that she stays okay.
Yeah.
And if she stumbles, she knows she has,
yeah.
You know, and she, I don't want to say she will stumble, but it's, you know, it's very common, right?
It's not an easy road, yeah.
And it's not an easy road, but now she's going to pay it forward.
Yeah.
And the next person pays it mm-hmm. forward, which is why, you know, I guess why I also love your podcast, because there's somebody who's going to listen and say, okay, I can still go to that next audition, or I'm going to get rejected and it's
yeah.
okay, or I can still do this, or, you know. I love the one about the person who became the DJ, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, snuck into some concert. And then like, but there was like that one sentence, right?
Yeah.
You should become a DJ. And, you know, like, so,
huh?
Okay.
Yeah.
Right? But that's going to spark somebody else to say, you know, maybe I should listen to the thing that sounds crazy.
Yeah.
And for that, Sally, you mm-hmm. know, I don't want to go to a meeting because I already know about meetings. If I wanted to go to a meeting, I would have gone to a meeting.
Yeah.
Right? But you got her to go, right?
Mm-hmm.
And look at the ripple effect it has on her family.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
Yeah. It was really beautiful. So then you also mentioned like the ending of the relationship. There was a reason for it. And I know you kind of touched on it now. But for me, when that long relationship ended, I think it was hard to understand like why I would experience love in that way only to have it taken mm-hmm. away. And I think sometimes, too, it's just knowing that you are capable of loving. Because I think, especially today, and I feel like my age group of people and dating, everyone is so, like, weird and closed off.
It's everybody.
Okay, good. And I think it is, too. But just knowing that you're capable of experiencing love and opening yourself up, I think is an accomplishment and a milestone. So, like the times I've been able to push through emotional trauma and like trust people to me is like harder than taking the bar. And the bar was brutal for me. So how did you talked a little bit about your healing journey. But how do you pay it forward?
I think I pay it forward by being honest about things, right? Whether you're a lawyer or any kind of, right now, everybody shows the best of who they are,
mm-hmm.
right? They show, this is me, look how beautiful I am. I'm in Mykonos with, you know, a fan throwing, you know, doing, you know, my hair, well, if I had hair, is
yeah.
flowing, that kind of stuff. But very few people are comfortable showing what's wrong.
Yeah.
And what doesn't work and what didn't work. And so I pay it forward by being authentic
mm-hmm.
and by, if I see somebody who needs help, I'll do the same kind of thing. Hey, do you want to,
yeah.
you know, maybe you should go to a meeting or maybe you should do this. I share the story of the close family member with a substance use disorder and bipolar.
Mm-hmm.
And I do that and I do it at the beginning of every school semester and I talk about it. And I've had students who've reached out to me, one who reached out to me, this is several years ago, when he was actually in a mental hospital and said, I need you to talk to my parents. They don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
And then 2 weeks later, he was home and he called me, said there's 7 police officers here.
Oh, wow.
Because my family called the police because, you know, whatever. And so I'm on the phone with him, talking to him and keeping him calm. But I could do that because I've dealt with that with a family member.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I know what that's like. And so, and the ability to be calm and stay calm under pressure, I think is my superpower. Right.
Yeah.
And so I couldn't not be on the phone with this person.
Mm-hmm.
And now I could have said the wrong thing and there could have been a massive shootout. That would have been devastating.
Yeah.
But I also pay it forward by listening to what my gut says. Mm. I wasn't going to pick up the phone, right? Because I was in the middle of doing something really important. And this voice said to me, pick up the phone. This is, and it said, literally, this is what you're here for.
Mm.
Right? And that's why I talk about the importance of, I can't not pay it forward.
Yeah.
Because that's what I'm here for.
Mm-hmm.
But I think of the issues I've dealt with that family member, with that ex-husband, with other kinds of issues. It's because I'm here to serve somebody else. And I can only do that, me personally,
mm-hmm.
through using my own experiences. Because some people are like, oh, you're a professor, you do this, and you're always traveling all over the world, and your life must be fantastic. Like, no,
mm-hmm.
right? It's not. And let me tell you why, and let me show you what's possible, that
yeah.
there is another side,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's what your podcast does yeah. also, right? There is life after this no.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, and oftentimes, if you reframe how you think about it, it's going to be better than what you had.
Yeah, absolutely. So your big no moment was getting divorced during COVID of all times, living in the same building. Was it COVID then?
Yeah,
it was COVID. No, it was COVID, right?
100% COVID.
Yeah. God. And how you, the thank you is everything you've learned about yourself and what it led you to, and just being the different mindset you've had and what you've got to explore. Like, that is such a great thank you for saying no moment.
I was like, what am I going to say? Because again, like, I mean, no, it's all right. It's not for me. What's for me is for me. What's
yeah.
not for me is not for me.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because, and the reason that no was such a big deal, because like, we are here to show people what's possible as a couple when you get married later in life, and
yeah.
you can go skydiving if you're afraid of heights. Cause I did that with
him. Did you really?
Yes.
Did you throw up? I would throw up for sure.
I didn't throw up.
Okay.
I didn't throw up. And I thought of it because when we first met, I was like, yeah, I'll skydive. I was like, I'll skydive when I turn 50.
Yeah.
I just like to hook him, right? Because I wanted to look yeah, like yeah. I was adventurous,
yeah,
but
yeah.
I wasn't, right?
No,
I turned 50, like, I don't feel like doing it, right? And I was like, always some excuse. And then finally, I just did it. And I was like, and I'll tell you this, you know, and I don't think I've shared this with most people. I did it when I was my most depressed.
Mm.
Not like, I was not suicidal, like, all right, if the plane crashes, it crashes, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, what do I have to lose?
Yeah.
Right? I might throw up. It's going to be scary, but it can't be, I can't feel worse than I feel right now.
Yeah.
And if I do it, then what an accomplishment. And so when I did it, right, first of all, it's not that hard. The hardest thing is getting in the plane because you tether to somebody else. When they go, you go. When they go, you go, right? So like, you're like, stop, because like, you're going to go,
yeah.
right? And then I think he did like 1, 2, and I'm waiting for the 3, and of course he goes at 2, right? So that's the scam, everybody, they go at 2, right? And so, and I had my eyes closed for a little while. I'm like, wait a minute, why don't I open my eyes?
Mm-hmm.
But I was also thinking, what's the worst that can happen? I'm already so down. And then I looked like, oh my gosh, this is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I landed, I was like, I am unstoppable.
Yeah.
Like, you can't tell me anything. The week before, I had walked on hot coals because I did Tony Robbins the week before.
Oh my God.
So, and that started my journey of, I'm going to intentionally do scary things.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, I was scared. So I think there's nothing scarier than the fear of being alone,
mm-hmm.
right? And so the jumping out of the plane, the Tony Robbins happened before the divorce. But I reminded myself, you've jumped out of a plane, or you were pushed out of a plane, and you didn't throw up. So my skydiving pictures, I'm actually smiling.
Yeah.
People are like, did you fake that? I'm like, you cannot fake smiling when you are coming from 10,000 feet and then you're like, and you hope the parachute opens.
Yeah.
Right? So
yeah.
Like, what are you talking about? But that's where I realized, like, there's joy. There can be joy in the fear.
Mm-hmm.
And so even though that happened before the divorce,
yeah.
when I went through the divorce, I would sit there and actually watch pictures of my skydiving video.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, you did that.
Wow.
Right. And sometimes we need those reminders of, look what I've come through.
Yeah. I like how you talk about how the no moment allowed you to evolve. I think, so I'm 29, mm-hmm. and I kind of think of my life in different phases. And I was sharing with like a group of women, we have these monthly calls. how, like, even at 29, I feel like I don't recognize myself. And then someone was like, you know, that's a trap because you do know yourself, but you're evolving as you get older. So this is just another version of you. And that really resonated with me to be able to, like, you know, it's not that I don't know who I am. It's that I'm growing and evolving.
And if there's an astrologer listening, I know I could be wrong. I feel like, but I've been told that your 28th and 29th year are very, like, between 27 and 29, there's a solar return. Like, that's when you're supposed to have a major change.
Okay.
So that could be why. So check with your local astrologer.
Yeah. Her name is Demi Mundo, actually.
Hashtag no. So check. But so I'm going to ask you some questions. So tell me, of course, your listeners know, but my listeners don't know. Mm-hmm. What's your biggest no and how did that affect you?
So my big no is what led me to start the podcast. Well, I think I have two, but let me start with this one. So it's actually coming out of law school. You know, I really wanted to work in Washington, D.C., and I applied to hundreds of places out there, and every single rejection I got, which was all of them, I was like, you know what, one day I'll be glad this isn't working out. Like, I'll be saying thank you for saying no. So then when I finally got a job in California, actually, I didn't make it to D.C. yet. I was like, you know what, this would be a really good podcast. So that was kind of my big no, but it felt really big for me because I wanted to be in DC so bad. And I would like do cold calls with attorneys at with partners at firms I wanted to work at. And one person even said, like, you wouldn't even get through the door here. Like, you're not coming from a DC school. Like, your grades aren't good enough. Like, you didn't do this, you didn't do that, whatever, whatever. I'm like, okay. Like, that didn't stop me from trying, but like, that's how hard it was. And so I had to kind of pivot a little and like rethink what I almost moved to DC actually. And I was like, let me just get an apartment and figure out when I get there. And then when I was like, well, loans are going to kick in. And if I don't have a job and I'm not barred, like it just wasn't making sense. So I ended up moving back home and it was a hard decision because it felt like I was giving up in a way. Like I didn't unpack my boxes for a year. They just stayed in the garage and I just like wore the same outfit for like almost a year. But that was a big no for me, and that, but that led me to my podcast, and I love my podcast, and I love being home with my family, and so now.
What made you not give up, though? Because, so some people that are listening, they'd be like, well, I'm not in law school, I don't have to talk to 100 people, but there are people looking for jobs, starting businesses, so what made you say, I'm not going to give up, besides, like, you have to eat and pay your student loans back?
Yeah. It's this passion. It's like, it's a passion that I feel that's the best way I can describe it. Cause you know, I've asked people this question too. It's like, how do you know that? Like, what's that gut feeling like for people who don't have that same intuition feeling? But it's like when things align, it just works and there's no other way to describe it. And even the hard things, like you're able to figure them out and work them out. And so for me, like, knowing that I wouldn't get to DC right away, I was like, well, I'm still an environmental attorney in California and now I love what I do. But it was just being willing to see a bigger picture and that the path is only just starting, even though I feel like it's ending because I'm not where I thought I was going to be.
Was there ever a point where you said, is this maybe these no's are meant to tell me that I'm not in the right career? Did you ever have that thought that maybe that's what I'm getting all this knows. Maybe that's the message from the universe or, you know, as I call it, joy, to do something different.
No, because of that passion feeling that I had. I knew I wanted to be an environmental attorney. That's why I went to law school. And I was not wavering on that. And it's funny because my dad, he supports me 100%. So I don't want to make it sound like he doesn't. But he was always like, work at a big law firm, like have the perks and like this, this and that. And I'd be like, no, I want to be an environmental attorney. And I work remote. Right. And so like, you know, but it's just so funny. And I knew through all those conversations with my dad that only solidified that this is what I want to do.
Awesome. So have you been, so you bring people on your podcast who are super inspiring. What's been the biggest inspiration for you? Has there been a book or a saying? Because remember I told you, I think like somebody can say one thing and like your life can change, or a movie or a mantra or something that really inspired you. And what would that be?
So we had an episode with a comedian named Drew Morgan and he was an attorney.
I heard that one. Yeah.
And then he turned into a comedian and we were talking about cases and the hard times and the hard cases because he did criminal work. And so his cases are really, really like tough mentally and emotionally and stuff. And so he was like, I think at that point in recording the episode, I had just lost my first case. And it was like a big case we've been working on. The firm had been working on it before I got there. And actually, it's the case I told your class about, the one where it was like, you know, sometimes we bring the case for the message it sends, whether or not we win.
Right.
But of course, we want to win. So, but I was, I think I brought that up. And he was like, you know, if you're going to like marvel on the losses and really hamper and think about them, like you have to think about the wins too.
Absolutely.
And so that actually really stuck with me. Because now as I'm, that I think that episode was almost a year ago, 6 to 8 months ago. And a lot happens in 6 to 8 months in the legal world. Since then, I'm like even yesterday, I had a hearing and the judge granted it on the papers. And I'm like, yes, like we did it. Even though it was like one step towards like, you know. Yeah. But just, yeah, I really took that to heart. And I feel like that's really important.
Yeah, I think it's, I try to tell people that they need to celebrate every single day.
Yeah.
Something. Mm-hmm. When I talk to some of my coaching clients, the first question I ask them is, what's the best thing that happened in the last 2 weeks? And a lot of times they have to sit there and think about it. But, you know, there's a lot of science that talks about why gratitude is actually really helpful. Mm-hmm. And some people, when they look at gratitude, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, all right, I've already thought about it. I'm glad I woke up this morning. I'm glad the sun shines. Like they're like searching for things, right?
Yeah.
But sometimes, but when you train your brain to start thinking about what am I happy about? What can I celebrate? I'm not saying that this is not toxic positivity, right? It's not like, you know, you're not going to remember that your mortgage is 2 months behind or that you're still looking for a job after 100 interviews, but it does train you. And so, you know, I'm glad that, you know, and I remember listening to that episode. I'm glad that you celebrate the big wins and that you won, but you got to celebrate the, hey, this happened today. And if you're in a bad mood, like, look, I'm glad I didn't smack somebody today.
Yeah.
That's a celebration, right? Let's be real. Like, it can't all be butterflies and unicorns. Like, or I got up this morning. Mm-hmm. And sometimes for some people, for many people who deal with depression, et cetera, that is a huge thing.
It is.
To get up and get out of bed and just, you know, brush your teeth for some people. So I tell people, celebrate every day. Find something that you're celebrating about and go to bed at night thinking about, I did this today. I got through two, because we do this. I had 7 things on my to-do list and I only got through 2.
Yeah.
As opposed to, fantastic, I got through 2 of those things and I crushed it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a different, but it's a totally different way that, because you don't look at yourself as failing.
Yeah.
So speaking of failure, how do you look at failure now? And how do you think that's changed since maybe even a few years ago?
I think I'm more comfortable failing because I don't see it as failure per se. I see it as a learning lesson and an opportunity to grow. And so even through like my college days or once I started living on my own, you know, and doing my own stuff, I would always like try new things because I liked trying new things. And I feel like that served me well in my professional life because I wasn't scared to be bad at things. And even like, of course, I don't want to be bad at things. So I'm not like, oh, I can do anything. But it's like I'm not afraid to be bad. And I'm allow myself to be bad. And I use that like not wanting to be so bad. This is coming out weird. But as fuel to figure things out.
So where'd you get that mindset of not being afraid to be bad or not being afraid to fail? And I'm putting fail air quotes for those people who aren't watching the video.
Honestly, probably my parents. My dad always pushed me to do new things. My dad is like a jack of all trades. He just wears so many different hats. And so I always admired that in him. And my mom too. She, you know, my parents both owned a business. And then when they got divorced, my mom became a massage therapist and my dad became the project manager. And so, you know, it's just, they both have set an example of, we can just figure it out.
I love that. That's so cool. So I talked about what my superpower is. What do you think your superpower is? And do you think everybody has a superpower?
I feel like it's
been trendy to say that.
Yeah.
And I think everybody does have a superpower, but they don't necessarily know what it is.
Yeah.
So do you know what yours is?
I think my superpower is like being able to make people feel comfortable. So maybe listening. Like I'm a good listener and I hold space well for people because I've been through a lot of life experiences and I can relate and not make you feel crazy because that would make me crazy. So yeah, I just, you know, what is the, like nurturing. I think nurturing is my superpower.
So now I'm going to go back and flip the script on you.
Okay.
You talked about a few minutes ago about being 12 years clean.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get there? And what was that point where you said, this is the time, I've got to do it?
So I was 16 years old when I got clean. And this was actually my first big no moment, is when I was in high school and all my friends were going to college. I had applied to colleges, but I didn't get into any schools because I, you know, it was not a great time. And so I remember thinking at the time, like, holy shit, I didn't get into any schools. Like, I'm going to have to go to community college. Like, I'm set me back so far. But in retrospect, I'm so glad that happened. Like, so glad that happened. It allowed me to build a foundation of support that has carried me through my entire journey and has allowed me to live in, you know, the Bay Area. I'm from LA, so it allowed me to live in the Bay Area, Miami, DC, like everywhere I go, I know how to set myself up so that I'm supported. And that feels really good, that I can trust myself. So that was like my big no moment, was not getting into any single school that I applied to, having to go to community college. And then I actually reapplied, and then I got into all the schools that I applied to. So it was like, that was a big deal for me.
That is a big deal. So you've got like a trend of getting all of this rejection and then something kind of the rejection and the redirection, right?
Yeah.
So something else comes up.
Yeah.
That's better for you.
Yeah.
So you are 29.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any kind of routine where something, so some people have a morning routine and some people like, my morning routine is getting up as soon as the alarm clock.
Yeah,
and then
I'm lucky.
I go back to sleep and I snooze and then I like bedraggled get to work. Right. So I'm not saying you have to have one, but is there something, is there a morning thing or an evening thing or some kind of ritual that if you don't do it, you don't feel like your day has gone the same?
So I really like to meditate. And I will say that when I'm meditating regularly, my days are better. I don't have a morning routine. I think I'm at this weird place because I'm about to be 30 that like routines kind of freak me out and make me feel like time goes too fast. And so I like want every single day to be different. But I think that's more like fear-based right now, because routines in the past have really helped me. But no, right now my days are like very chaotic, but everything gets done. But I will say, when I meditate, I joined a meditation studio earlier this year because I was actually going through a really rough patch. And I feel like as an adult, sometimes you want to just like go check yourself into a facility, but you can't because bills and a job and like all these things.
Yeah.
So I ended up joining a meditation studio, and I would be there like 3 hours a day, like just not have my phone, do all these different things. I remember I did a breathwork class for the first time, which was like so intense. And eventually I ended up just in this very meditative space. And after the class, I was like the last one laying there, because I was like, what the hell just happened? And the lady came up, she's like, you okay? I was like, no. I just like started bawling. It was so intense. But so I didn't go back to breathwork, but the meditation was really, really cool. And I think I'll share this one actually. So I was going through like a really hard time in my life with some family stuff and just all these different sorts of things. And so I found like a safe space in meditation. And I've shared about this on the podcast before where, you know, it's kind of visual. So we're laying in a enchanted garden or whatever, and there's a circle around you. And that first circle is supposed to be your like safe people in this realm. And then the second circle is supposed to be your angels. And in this particular meditation, I was frustrated with everybody in this realm. So I pictured the mountains and the ocean instead. And then in the second realm, I had my angels with me. And then I remember having this fear though, like what if in my safe space, like just call it the devil comes in and it's no longer safe for me. Because I meditate very visually. And so I was like so panicked about this happening, and it happens. Like the devil comes into my safe space and I'm like, oh shit, like it's happening. Like, how do I do this? And so I remember like literally like Kung Fu fighting the devil, and my angels are behind me, like supporting me, Kung Fu, and the devil leaves and I'm back in my safe space and everything's fine. And for me, that meditation is so powerful because it reminds me of the power within myself and like how I can conquer things, because the hardest battles are the ones inside of
me. Absolutely.
And so being able to like regain my safe space, my enchanted garden, was a really big deal at the time. And so meditation has always been really impactful and made my life better.
So I'm going to encourage you to go back and think about breath work.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that.
So you know, again, in my vast spare time during my depths of despair when I got 8 million certifications,
yeah,
I got certified in breath work. And the kind of breath work that probably you went through that was super intense, where it's a specific kind of breathing for like, yeah, exactly. Right? The, you know, belly chest. Yeah, yeah. Right? So, but there's all kinds of science behind that. But yeah, also that emotional release that you get is really, really strong.
Yeah.
I've did it with somebody who hadn't cried for 2 years,
even though
that person had a ton of debts in their family. And I've done it with other people where they can have really significant revelations. But even if you don't do that, just some kind of breath work, whether it's the Wim Hof type breathing or the holotropic there's so many different kinds. Mm-hmm. What it does is it releases, you know, DMT, which, you know, I should be able to say it, but I can't. I'm whatever. look it up. But it's the same feelings that you can get with the visualization. Same things that you can get, you know, when I did ayahuasca last year, I was like, oh, I don't know if I need to do ayahuasca again because I can get those same feelings with a very, you know, serious breathwork session.
Yeah.
So I encourage people to think about it. Obviously, if you have medical conditions, please don't do it. And look at the camera. Please check with your medical professional because I'm not a doctor.
Yeah. Right?
But it can be life changing.
Yeah.
In the same way as that meditation practice, and we're similar because we both are very visual.
Yeah.
So I can see all kinds of things.
Yeah.
And some people aren't. So just finding something where you feel like your safe place, your happy place that you can go to is so important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we're reaching the end here, but is there anything, any last words of illuminating wisdom you want to share?
I think it's to do something scary and hard.
Yeah.
Once a month. I tried to once a week.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I jumped out of the plane. That's why I did a helicopter ride. That's why I did the hot air balloon. That's why I'm going to climb Kilimanjaro because it's going to be scary.
I have weak ankles.
And I have bad knees, like literally not allowed to walk up 2 flights of stairs. So it's going to be like, so if I can't do it, I'll just chill in the village of the Tanzanians and I'll go do the Serengeti thing afterwards. Win-win, right? I'll be in the best shape of my life.
Yeah.
And whatever.
Yeah.
But if you do those scary things,
when
that stuff happens, right? So my mother went through, she's 86, went through cancer, chemotherapy, lung surgery. My dad is in hospice right now. Dealing with all those scary things at the same time earlier this year, it wasn't scary to me because I've been training my brain to do scary things and that to do hard things. And that is like how people train for climbing Kilimanjaro. But I train myself mentally to be prepared for the hard things. And that's the best, you know, for you, it might be not you. For some people, it might be getting in a bikini on the beach. That's the scariest thing they'll do. Or doing karaoke.
Yeah.
Or telling somebody that they love them.
Mm.
With this more scary
I
things
would
you
never.
Do.
Never. Never.
The more scary things you do, the more scary things you can get over. And that's how you build grit and resilience.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being here and sharing all this today.
And what's your one thing that you want people to know if they knew nothing else, if they remembered nothing else from this episode, what's something you want them to remember?
Even when you're going through a no moment, it can turn out better than you would ever expect. So don't worry and don't give up.
Amen to that.
Amen. And real quick, you guys, before we end, right now we are at the Daddy Media Studio. It's in Aventura. It's a really great setup. I love it. They have these cute chairs and these microphones. They're fully equipped. They have video cameras, state-of-the-art microphones. So definitely check them out if you have a podcast. We have a lot of podcast listeners.
And I know I'll be back because I live down the street. And
yeah.
I know it's a relatively new place. So I'm going to be interviewing people in person because usually people are remote. But this will definitely be a place that I'm going to come because I love it here.
So it's Daddy Media Studios. I'll link it in our description. And thanks so much for listening.
Thanks for having me.
Follow and subscribe to the Thank You for Saying No podcast, and you'll get every episode as soon as it's released.